And you're on the panel with poet and academic Dr. Carla Miller and Connor English for the first time on the panel, the chairman of Agribusiness NZ and former chief executive for Federated Farmers. On that, look, a large response to the quad bike subject. The low centre of gravity also makes them hard to roll in the first place. They are very hard to roll on the flat, but farmers are often negotiating steep slopes. That is the danger time. Mm. I don't think most farmers are idiots. So I really value your responses. Thank you very much for getting in touch to the panel. Now, on this, before we get on to our question of the day, let's kick off very briefly with the topic itself. Recall the school camp. Some principals are concerned that new funding guidelines from the Ministry of Education will stop them taking students on school camps. The rules around what you can and can't ask for have been updated, so lower decile schools who don't ask parents for a donation are given extra funding from the ministry. The principals understand the wording to mean they cannot ask their families for any money if it's related to any part of the curriculum, which they say means they're not going to be asked for payments for school camps because, you know, they are part of the curriculum. Under the rules, they're arguing school camp payments would be a voluntary donation from families and not compulsory. So, you know, it's all a bit confusing, actually, but they say that means that the school camp ritual many of us experienced could be a thing of the past for some. So around the panel, what do you think? How important, Carla, do you feel that school camps are for our children throughout their education?
I just think they're so important. It's such a rite of passage, and so many of our children are in such urban areas that those sorts of experiences do obviously last a lifetime going by.
That's a very, never thought of that actually. Yeah. By, I mean, the memories of the school camp have been literally seared on the memory. How many weeks of school can I recall in, you know, form 6 or form 2 or whatever? None, but I can recall school camp.
Yeah,
interesting. What about what about you, Connor? I mean, what do you make of the issue? It's actually, this voluntary donations thing is actually getting a bit confusing, isn't it?
It is. I've never not paid for a camp. Which camps have been free for which schools? Like, ever not paid for a camp? It just seems strange to me. Connor? Sorry, Connor.
Yeah, no, look, I think the government does need to clarify it, because I think you're right. It's important that kids get out into the, and you know, out camping, out into the wild, out into the countryside, if you like. It's sort of part of the growing process, isn't it, as young adults. So if they're going to stop because of some administrative issue around a policy, then I think the definition needs to be refined and clarified. You should be able to go on school camp, and you can't do it without money, and the money probably should come from the parents.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking to a colleague here, Carlo, who was saying that, look, you know, they've just been on a school camp, fantastic time, but they were warned months in advance that the camp was going to happen, but nonetheless, it did cost $480 for that child to go to the camp. So that,
it's such an issue.
$500.
I know.
That would be a barrier to some people, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You reckon? So when our kids were at Newtown School, there was so much fundraising to bring down the cost of camp to $30, which meant, it was an incredible amount of fundraising, but just so that everyone had a fair go of attending. And then the boys went to a different school, which I won't name, and it was $300, and so many of the kids couldn't participate. And I actually ended up meeting with the principal. I was just so upset. There were so many costs all year, especially for things like kind of like the end of year picnic. It was another $10 here and another $10 there. And these are kind of really important things that children shouldn't be prevented from attending. Again, rites of passage. And I guess what I'm thinking and what I said to her is, you know, as our society becomes increasingly inequitable, this sort of thing needs to be factored in. Like, so 40% of households in New Zealand own 3% of the wealth. So that's the reality. Like, that's how poor they are. 40% of our households, 3% of the wealth, which means 12 kids out of 30, in any given classroom, are really going to be struggling financially. So how do we make sure that we live our values, that all children deserve to participate in these sorts of things? You know, I don't think we should be leaving kids behind.
Do you agree with that, Connor? Not leaving kids behind when it comes to the end of year school picnic, when it comes to the camp, or is the camp, do we just have to get, I don't know, I'm just going to say a little bit hard and say it's optional?
Well, look, it's just getting the clarity, isn't it? I mean, whatever the rules are, you need to know what the rules are. And at the moment, it seems like people don't. So as Carla said, you know, schools can do fundraising to reduce the cost. And also you get a bit of innovation, don't you, when people are paying for things, and you get people to appreciate things. If it was all free, perhaps, you know, people would stay in bed. They wouldn't turn up. They wouldn't bother going. So I don't know. I think it's you just got to get clarity.
I think if I got the option of going up Ruapehu for a skiing trip, I might too lie in bed and not feel like going if it was free. Sorry, I don't know. I just roll in different circles, clearly.
Well, no, I mean, but it is just getting clarity, isn't it? I mean, everyone agrees that it's a good idea for kids to go on school camps. So it's just how you go about doing it, and it seems to have gone fine until now, when there's some new policy that seems to be creating the confusion. So the government should just clarify it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it is a problem, actually. I watch lots of kids at my children's school get excluded, and I was thinking, yep. How can we, you know, like, because it's not children's fault that their parents can't afford to pay for them to go to camp or buy school photos or those kinds of things. Like, no matter how parents might, like, inverted commas, mismanage their money, it is not those children's fault. And they should be able to fully participate in school. And I think that's where the innovation needs to happen, not from the 40% of households with the 3% of wealth, but from the schools and the Board of Trustees to go, hey, our values are that all of our kids participate in the end of school picnic, so let's make that happen. And if Mufti Days are going to that instead of something else, I don't know. I just think New Zealand has always been about all kids participating, regardless of background. And I think that needs to be lived by our schools, our Board of Trustees, regardless of what the government's doing. I think as a community, we need to take responsibility.
Well, it's the same with sport too, isn't it?
Agreed. Well, I'll tell you what, speaking, it's what is very obvious is that people have had some very strong experiences of their first time at camp. So what I'll do is I'll kick off and then I'll go around the panel. So my school camp, it's actually quite extraordinary to think of it now. So I'll start the question of the day. What was my experience? So at Nelson College, we went up to Matakitaki College, Matakitaki Valley. We went on a week-long camp. And it was a military-style camp. And can you believe it? We shot M16s, 5.56mm M16s, which I think, Connor, you can correct me, I can't remember now, but they're the automatic weapon that you can put onto semi.
Okay, yep. I don't know. I'm not a big gun guy, so.
And the swath, I thought you were.
Yeah. He's a hugging guy.
And he's a hugging guy.
Yeah, hugs, not guns.
Hugs, yeah, not exactly. Guns. Well, I tell you what, it was all about guns for me back in. that is my experience.
Yeah. What did you shoot?
Well, we were told to get it on our belly, and there was an image of a soldier, right across the valley. And they said, all right, rapid fire, five rounds.
Wow.
One push the trigger, and I can tell you what, here's what I remember of that whole time at my school camp, the power of that gun, that automatic. And when I went, go, and my shoulder going, bang, 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 and Sergeant O'Leary going, keep that rifle straight, Chapman.
My son, Nicholas, that would be his dream come true.
That was
honestly
my school camp.
Wow. I can't believe they let you do that.
M16s.
Far out.
Yes.
Well, it's a good thing you weren't doing it in the classroom.
Well, yes. That is.
Can't even imagine.
That's right,
that.
Connor. All right. Okay. All right. What was your school camp experience? Connor, English.
I guess the only sort of school camping stuff I did was with Duke of Edinburgh here in Wellington and going in the rain for about 3 days. And getting absolutely drenched and coming home and being very relieved about it.
It always rains on school camp, eh? Yeah. Always, you know.
But it was good. I was at a boarding school and it was quite good to get out in the bush, and we learned how to light fires in the rain and that sort of thing, mostly by just putting something over to stop the rain getting on the fire.
I was going to ask you, how do you do that? Can you email me so I know? Oh, yeah. I actually want to know. All right, Carlo, what about you?
My main memory is just a confidence course in the dark, which was just so exciting. And That's pretty much all I can remember. But I was in Palmerston North, and we went to places like Sixtus Lodge. Like, it wasn't exactly Ruapehu or anything exciting like that. And there were definitely no guns.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so what are some of yours? Ellie says, last day of day camp riding horses. I'm like, yo, I think this horse hates me. They say, no way, he's fine. Next minute, sheep scares horse, horse bucks and bolts. Me still holding on. Do I let go or do I go for a wild ride? Long story short, my neck has never recovered from the fall. Another one here, Kirsten tweeted, went hiking on fourth form camp. I'd had plenty of experience through air cadets, so had better gear, kept my boots dry and didn't freeze on the ridge. The rest of the girls didn't fare so well. Another one here, my memory of school camp is making perfect boiled custard in one pot for 100 kids, teachers and parents. Then later that night, singing the Shoop Shoop song in the talent quest with then my year six daughter, now a UK-based musician and lead singer, and her four-year-old sister, all in our pyjamas. That's a cool memory, isn't it? Yeah. Text here says, I went to Otaki College and we had the most amazing school camps, including sailing across the Cook Strait, kayaking the Rangitikei River and tramping Mount Taranaki and Tongariro Crossing. I do feel sorry for all the kids who now miss out on great adventures due to all the health and safety issues. Mm. That's Glenn from Nelson. Mm. Another text, Gary in Mount Eden says, school music camp in Woodend. I met my wife at this camp 50 years ago. She was in the choir and I was the pot scrubber. After 40 years of marriage, I still scrub the pots and she still calls the tune. there are many, many more, so just one more. Cooking roast beef and all the trimmings, including homemade cauliflower cheese and port and Stilton gravy for the adults. I have been camp cooked too many times to recall. So thank you very much for all your wonderful responses there. And someone says, I don't think Major O'Leary would appreciate being called Sergeant. So thank you very much for the clarification there. I appreciate it. It's 50 minutes away from five. We have Dr. Carlo Mila and Connor English, Chairman of Agribusiness NZ, with me on the show. The latest News Hub Reed Research poll was out last night showing that a Labor Greens coalition government could return to power on the latest numbers, but Labor has taken a big hit. It is 41.6% down 9.2. National is up 6.5 to 43.9. The Greens are up 0.1. New Zealand First has moved up 1.3 to 4%. And ACT, now they are on 1.4%. So they have gone up quite a bit. In fact, the largest since 2014, I do believe. So look, we can't take much from one poll, Carlo, and there is another poll tonight on One News, Brunton, and they can form a government on these numbers, but bit of a hit for Labor. What are your thoughts on this?
I don't know. Well, so obviously I'm left of Labor, but I've been quite disappointed with the leadership shown on Ihu Mātou, disappointed with Toia 250, and I've just kind of watched. I feel so sorry, actually, for the Māori MPs, and that they're swinging votes. They swing, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do. But I'm sure that Connor's going to have way more better analysis than me as to why they've dipped.
No. Well, it's interesting coming from that point of view, saying that here you are as a person who sides with them in general, but you, here you are as a disgruntled voter, perhaps? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just a bit disappointed.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Connor, what do you think? What do you make, if anything? I mean, they can still return to power, but what do you make of the numbers?
Look, I think the point you make that it's one poll and you know, we'll be interested to see what comes out tonight. But if the trend is sort of downwards for Labor, I imagine that they will be getting a bit concerned about that leading into an election year. And next year it's going to be a lot more competitive for them with the Greens and with New Zealand, you know, with all the other parties, because everyone's going for the party vote, aren't they? But I almost wonder whether, you know, Jacinda Ardern's a wee bit like Barack Obama, and that came in with enormous promise. And you know, I was at the US Embassy when he did his inauguration speech, and people in the audience were crying with the sort of hope and the dream that Barack Obama was going to move society in a way that hadn't been moved before. But he ended up sort of frustrating his followers and disappointing them, I think. And I just wonder whether, with the Prime Minister, whether there's a wee bit of that effect sort of coming into it. There's such an expectation of change, and they talked a lot about the changes they were going to make, and people, rightly or wrongly, because they have made a lot of changes, and they are making a lot of changes, are perhaps not appreciating that or interpreting it that way. So the
Pick still, Elton John, if he could be any woman in the world, just chose Jacinda Ardern. I mean,
boom,
yeah.
Mic drop.
It is a bit of a mic drop. And if she's been considered to Barack Obama, then maybe things are better than I think.
Yeah, okay, but yeah. I think the other thing too is that intrigues me is, you know, business confidence is down, but you know, interest rates have never been lower. Unemployment's never been lower. You know, we've got a very good surplus that the government, you know, reported on recently.
So what's going on? It seems to be there's mixed messages.
Yeah, I think there are mixed messages. I agree with you. And then there have been a lot of inquiries, right? And so, I mean, sorry, I actually wrote the Pacific Mental Health of the Mental Health Inquiry, Connor, so you were just saying that maybe it was a bit of a waste of time, but I don't feel like it was. I feel like a lot of people were heard, but it was a really long, slow, comprehensive process. Okay. And then to see that translated into actual meaningful actions, you've got that happening with Oranga Tamariki as well. So I don't know. But it's the slow pace of these inquiries and actually seeing tangible outcomes. I'm not sure.
And I wouldn't be surprised at all if the government says exactly that going into the next election campaign, is that, look, we've been building up momentum. We need another go to complete or to continue what we've started. We just haven't had enough time to get things changed on the ground the way that we thought.
Just a final note on this, and Connor, maybe you might be one for this, because I do find it very interesting. You've got this, you know, whatever we make of it, Nationals polling, it's been across the years extraordinarily resilient. You've got this very strong base. What's key? What's key for National now going forward? What do they need to do? Do they need to find a partner? You've got ACT. David Seymour said they can't be written off. They might have two MPs on these numbers. What does National need to do in your opinion?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I think one of the reasons why they've got resilience, if you like, in their support base is just simply that people trust them. And I think that's possibly another thing with the Labor supporters, that people are not sure whether they can sort of trust them the same way that they thought they might be able to. But in terms of what they got to do to get elected, well, it's pretty simple. You just got to get enough MPs to have the majority. And last election, they weren't able to do that. And so are they any better placed now to do that next time? And, you know, they've got to be able to work with New Zealand First, who are an obvious other party that they could coalesce with. The Greens have sort of seemed to have ruled that out, which has always puzzled me.
It's all about the numbers, isn't it, Carlo?
People
may forget that we are in an MMP environment.
I think both those major parties, both Red and Blue, have pretty high trust. But, yeah, it is all about the numbers.
It's 10 away from 5. You're on the panel, Carlo Mila and Connor English with me. This afternoon. Now to this, prefabs in New Zealand. Look, they've been around for a long time. For example, the large-scale government investment in infrastructure projects like the hydroelectric scheme housing. But with the recent housing woes, prefab housing has been cited as one part of the answer. Advocates say that by constructing the parts in a controlled environment away from the weather, things can be closely monitored and more efficient. But can it deliver to scale? Is it just another buzzword or a trend? So the government wants some red tape out of the Building Act to allow more homes to be built more quickly. Building and Construction Minister Jeannie Salisa said the Act made building houses slow and expensive. So one of the solutions, ramp up prefabs to make high-quality manufacturing of prefabs a reality. Now, this is interesting. In New Zealand, 10% of newly built homes are prefabbed off-site. In some countries, that figure is 80%. What do you reckon, Carlo? Often, it's interesting, that word prefab entails those, when sometimes the first thing that comes to mind is those, yes, that's right, those cheap temporary school buildings. But that's kind of an outdated way of thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we're in a housing crisis, so we definitely need some innovative ways of shifting it. So if I don't know enough to be able to say anything sensible on this, but it sounds like a good idea to me.
roll the dice and see if it works. What
help,
do you think?
Help, prefab housing experts. I'm not one, but I would love to see things move faster.
Well, you're in luck. Before we go to our guest, Connor, is this a way to address our housing issues? A lot less red tape with them.
Yeah, look, it's another thing that the government is absolutely heading in the right direction on. We've got to get the cost of construction down, and the supply chain that we currently have, the sort of traditional supply chain, is incredibly expensive. And there's some vested interests in there who want to keep it that way, and so they've always fought against more flexibility in regulations that allow other ways of constructing houses or buildings. And the prefab that you talk about, you know, you can build prefab homes 20 stories tall. That's the other thing that we need to do, is not only the construction methods, but we need to go up in our cities and have more bedrooms on a plot of land. You know, three bedrooms on 500 metres in Auckland, it's going to cost you a hell of a lot per bedroom, but you put 100 bedrooms on that plot of land, you're going to be affordable, you know. And I'm pretty exercised on this one, because I've got half a dozen kids and they're all going to need to buy homes, and they simply cannot afford, like most people, to spend $1 million on a three or four bedroom home. So the government's heading in the right direction. If anything, they should be more aggressive with it. And they should also look at the standards, because some of the standards there are just simply a barrier to entry.
Well,
that have been put up by incumbents who have a privileged position that they use standards to protect themselves with. And I think we need to reassess some of that stuff as well.
And this is the concern, isn't it, Carlo? You've got you know, like Connor, parents out there who go, okay, how are my children going to, you know, how's your wee bubba going to afford a house in the future? How's my little toddler going to afford a house in the future?
Yeah, I have this idea. That if you could have like maybe a prefab that houses just like one bedroom, but it has pre-approval to like add another and add extra bits, because us PIs, we're actually pretty good at doing overcrowding. So we could overcrowd for a bit, but all be saving up to then extend it and extend it and extend it. And that's one way that I see that we could maybe get into the housing market, so that overcrowding works for us rather than against us.
Have a modular system.
Yeah, a modular system.
There's those systems out there.
You know, yeah, I would love that. I just think, why can't we do that? We would do that. I could see
it working.
Does
that speak to that idea of when we construct a city, we got to speak to diversity as well? So that modular system, as you say, and I know that too, you know, when you have
like your grandparents, then we're just going to have to wait a year, and then you can have your own wing, you know? Yeah. Like, and then we'll save up money, and then the cousins can be over there. Yeah. And, you know, that's actually a way that I could see us owning houses.
The other thing, though, on this is that, you know, our family structures have diversified. It's no longer just always mum, dad and three kids.
No.
You know, we've got single people, we've got, you know, all sorts of shapes, sizes and shapes of family structure, but we still seem to think in our planning laws that what you have to have is 500 metres you're not allowed to have more than 30% built on, because we need a grassy pitch out the back so you can play cricket on a Saturday afternoon, and you're going to have mum, dad and three kids in it. I mean, we're not adapting to our demographic change.
And we've already got heaps of people living in garages in South Auckland. Like, why not let's get real about that and actually allow those things to be built safely and warmly?
Okay, well, with us, we have Prefab NZ CEO Scott Fisher. Now, Prefab NZ is a non-profit group that advocates for this sort of off-site design and construction in New Zealand. Scott, welcome.
Thank you, Wallace. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you very much. I actually want to address Carlo's issue there, because that really does sound very, very interesting as an idea. These sort of modular homes where you don't have to go through consenting again, but you can actually just slide along an extra so for grandmother to come in. I just think that's a great use of a new type of thinking. What do you reckon?
It's a massively exciting part of the construction sector, and there's lots and lots of different solutions that are available now. And looking, I think, moving forward in the years ahead, you know, changes continue at pace. Definitely the industry's embracing off-site manufacturing. Technology is helping to drive some great design. Factories provide better work environments in which to build those better quality homes. And the off-site industry is really embracing the high-performance houses, you know, including insulation, because I think the opening remarks about cheap, boring and not insulated are very much in the past.
Okay.
Things have definitely changed.
Oh, so the question is this. Can you do it? Can you get up to scale? Now that you've had a commitment of sorts from the government, do you now have the confidence?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the industry is doing it, and in many ways there's been some quiet achievers doing a lot for some period of time. The recent changes are really welcomed, and I think it's great news for the industry, but also the public, because there's a lot of current friction in the consenting process, and I think the proposal that's been put forward, which will come into effect next year, will take quite a bit of that friction out. If you've got time, I've got an example of, for example, with
briefly,
if part of a house or a house is built in Christchurch and goes to another location in the country, the receiving council doesn't automatically accept that.
Right.
And that can cause some real delays, and that's not good for the customer, the home buyer, and it's not great for the builder also. Any bottleneck in the system really does create delays, and that introduces extra cost as well. And this is not about cutting corners at all. This is about taking out duplication in a process which slows things down, and it's much better to have the homeowner in their home much quicker. That means less rent. That means no bridging finance, for example. So, look, the proposal is great news. It's welcomed, and it's just going to be part of a very exciting sector.
That's the end of our show. Scott Fisher, Prefab NZ, thank you so much. A lot of response to the camps. Nelson Girls College, Lake Rotowiti School Camp. We learned all about 303 rifles. There we have it. Hey, you both be fantastic. Dr. Carla Miller and Connor English, thank you very much for being with me today.
Cheers. Thank you.
See you tomorrow. I'm Melissa Chapman. Checkpoint next. Bye.